It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Firefighter Corey Barr lost his life earlier this week in Sun Prairie. He was responding, along with his colleagues, to a report of a gas leak in actually the bar that he owned. They all ended up in the middle of a blast area. The Milwaukee Journal Sentinel reports that five other firefighters, one police officer, and five residents were transported to the hospital. They are all expected to survive. But recovery, mentally and physically, will be tough. Today, we welcome two fire chiefs, Stephen Davis for the Madison Fire Department and John Cohn for the Greenfield Fire Rescue. Cohn is also past president of the Wisconsin State Fire Chiefs Association, and Davis has been assisting the Sun Prairie Fire Department in the aftermath of Tuesday's explosion. Welcome to both of you, and sorry for your loss.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, and the opportunity to highlight what firefighters do.
So first, John Cohn, what does it mean to be a first responder?
It means everything. First responders really, truly dedicate their life to what we do. And a lot of people don't know that over 70% of this country and Wisconsin mirrors that. The fire service is made up of volunteer firefighters. Mm. So in a lot of communities across the country and the state, they don't have firefighters sitting in the station waiting for a call. They're out doing their other jobs. And when the need arises, those people come into the station and then go out and do the fire rescue part of their job. And that's a little bit different than Chief Davis and I, because we have career firefighters sitting in our stations doing that as a full-time job, training, prevention, and answering calls. But most of this country is 70% is volunteer.
I don't understand, Chief Davis. How is it that this is a really important job, fire and rescue and responding to emergencies. How is it that we don't pay 70% of the people who do it?
Well, I think a lot of times, you know, it's very expensive for communities that are smaller. And the level of call volume in those communities isn't that great typically. So if you have a city that's 3 to maybe 10,000 people, we don't get a lot of fires because we put such a good effort over the years into fire prevention. We have pretty safe communities in the state of Wisconsin. Our infrastructures are very safe. So it gets to be expensive to have career firefighters when there aren't a lot of calls to go on. And, the city of Madison, we do about 31,000 calls a year, which would be way too much for people to volunteer for because they wouldn't work their regular jobs because they'd go on calls every couple of minutes. So it makes sense as a model in a lot of communities, but when we start to see communities sneak up, then the call volume starts to be there. That's when typically they transition from a volunteer to a paid on premise or a career department.
You guys are on the fire end of the spectrum, John. But the title fireman can be a bit of a misnomer, right? You're doing other things besides tending fires. You're preventing fires. You're taking care of people when they're in accidents, when there has been perhaps a shooting or something like that. How do you prepare for all of that?
That's why the calls actually make up such a small percentage, and training is so important, and prevention is so important. And we have done an amazing job doing prevention. So that's why with safer codes, safer buildings, we have driven down the number of fires in our communities. A lot of us, though, when people think of fire departments, a lot of us also deliver medical services for our department, and it's another statistic that's pretty generalized across the country. But fire departments that deliver medical services, actually more than 80% of what we do is medical in nature. So in a sense, we're medical departments more so than fire departments for those that deliver those services. But we also are all hazards. I mean, we've seen a huge spike in our community, and I'm sure that's reflective across, you know, the state and the country of car crashes. You know, we're the ones that go and along with the police, but we're tending to the vehicles and the patients in those vehicles. And then it just trickles from there. Water rescues, I mean, we don't have very much water in our community, but ironically, we have to be prepared for that. 10 years ago, we had some heavy urban flooding. So although we don't have large bodies of water, it's something that we have to be prepared for. And then, you know, it runs the full gamut of, I mean, thinking of calls that, you know, we go on and have been on. Somebody's washing machine is unbalanced and it walks too far and it rips the hose out of the, you know, the faucet, and they don't know how to shut the water off. Sort of, you know, we joke when nobody knows who to call, call the fire department. So we're prepared to you know, we really are all hazards, and we respond to pretty much everything. And that's why I think it's another thing that attracts people to being a first responder. The work is very unique. It can be challenging. You have to think on your feet. And one minute you might be talking on the phone or eating dinner, and the next minute you're taking care of one of those calls. So, and that's why, you know, training is so important, and we have to obviously be safe in what we do to protect ourselves, to be able to protect others, but really all hazards. That's what we respond to, not simply fires.
We are talking to Fire Chiefs John Cohn and Stephen Davis. Are you a first responder? We want to hear from you. What attracted you to this job? And what's one of the hardest things that you found out about the job that you didn't initially anticipate? 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@wpr.org. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So, Stephen Davis, I'm going to throw that to you. You are now a fire chief. You didn't start out as a fire chief. What was one of the things that attracted you to the job? And what was one of the biggest surprises when you first got it?
Well, I'm kind of a classic story. I started following my dad, who volunteered for a small town north of here in Ryo, Wisconsin. And we lived next to the fire station when I was a kid, so I'd watch the siren blow and listen to the siren blow and watch him run across the yard and get in the fire truck and go. So I got excited real young to get in the business. And then once you get in, you know, I think there's an overwhelming amount of service, right? You feel the need to give back to the community, to help people, to serve people. And you know, once you get in, that's when you really start to learn what that service means. If you shut somebody's leaking toilet off at 2 a.m, it's amazing how grateful they are to resolve their emergency, because it's their emergency. And I think that's one of the neater things about fire and EMS and law enforcement is we don't define the emergency, right? Somebody else defines that for us. So we have to respond, though, and be ready to handle whatever that person's definition of emergency is, whether it's a, you know, three-story building fully involved, or chest pain, or even a cat scratch that's healing and itching really bad. So there's an overwhelming amount of reward in giving back and somebody just saying thank you. And that typically is a paycheck for somebody. You know, as Chief Cohn said, 70% or greater of our firefighters and EMS workers in this country are volunteers. And that's where their pay comes from, that thank you. You helped me, and I really appreciate it. So, you know, the service part of it, and the industry really attracts people that want to serve. We see a lot of military folks that come back from tours that serve the country, and they want to get in the field of police or EMS or fire. And then we just, you know, and we're constantly looking for really good people that have really good integrity and honesty and all the values that we want to bring forward that you need to have to serve.
We are talking about being a firefighter. We're taking your calls. Are you a firefighter? What are the things that you didn't anticipate about the job, and what drove you to the job? 800-642-1234. John, talk to me about How you train for all this? How you train for fighting a fire and dealing with hazardous materials and fixing somebody's toilet at 2 a.m. and dealing with somebody's medical issues? That's a lot to take on, as you said. When you don't know who to call, call the fire department.
Yeah, it's just every organization comes down to the people, our members. Those that are actually out there serving the community, and you can train, but the training is not going to be like the actual call that you're going to go on. So our people have to be well prepared. They have to be truly a team. They have to rely on team members because you might not have that expertise, but somebody else might. And then they also have to know when that exceeds sort of their capabilities and we have to call for more help. And actually, you know, we call it almost taking like a defensive posture that we might have to step back and maybe call in another group. And that's where, you know, we rely on each other. We're not the Greenfield Fire Department won't handle simply calls in Greenfield and we rely on our neighbors, as does everyone across the state and the country. So we have great partners that work with us. We have, you know, the Milwaukee Fire Department in our area has a much larger urban department that has more expertise, and they have a heavy urban rescue team. So if we get into something that exceeds our capability, a few years ago we had a vehicle that the semi in front of it hit the brakes and the vehicle behind it didn't stop. Hmm. And the vehicle ended up underneath the semi. And we initially started to try and extricate the person from the vehicle, and that exceeded our capabilities. And we called in the Milwaukee Fire Department Heavy Urban Rescue Team, and they brought in a trailer and people and essentially a lumber yard and started cutting lumber to raise the back end of the truck out that we were able to lift the truck and then pull the car out. So it's firefighting is a team sport, and we rely on each other. And I know Madison is a great neighbor to their communities. And, again, being a larger urban center, they have some capabilities that others don't. And we offer those services to each other because we're good partners, and we can't get it done alone.
Steve, I want to talk about the things that you're not prepared to deal with, the things that surprise you or surprise firefighters.
Well, a firefighter death in the line of duty, we're never prepared for. And I think, you know, when I actually was fortunate enough to be able to respond to Sun Prairie the night of the explosion, and nobody was ready for that, right? Nobody expected the building to blow up, and nobody expected for Captain Barr to be killed. And so, you know, we went through it with firefighter paramedic Rick Garner on April 1st of this year. He died shortly after shift, which is considered a line of duty death here in the city of Madison. And none of us were ready for it. We had policies in place, we had procedures in place, but that sets us back when that occurs, and in many cases for quite a while. So that's one of the biggest things. Otherwise, we try to be ready for everything. And so, you know, the key is having really good people responding to emergencies that are really have a really good fundamental base training on how to deal with the routine things, and then a mindset that they can adapt and kind of conquer whatever might get thrown at them, right? And so I think that we're very good at that, of being adaptable. And, you know, when we go on a call, we have a computer in the fire engine that gives us all the notes from the dispatcher when they take the 911 call. And many times it's not unusual to have those notes not match what we actually walk into or see. Mm. So we always have to be safe. We always have to be prepared to not see what we're expecting to see when we open a door or go around a corner. So
I know that first responders who respond to mass shootings themselves end up going through a lot of trauma. They see things that we don't necessarily see, that don't necessarily get reported as gruesomely as they are. And I've talked to firefighters and first responders who have struggled with just kind of dealing with their feelings. How do you know, you had now in this year two firefighters in this area who have been killed. How do you deal with that kind of mental trauma? How do you bring people along?
Well, I'm happy to say that the fire service, I think, is finally kind of waking up to this issue of post-traumatic stress or whatever you want to label it or call it. And a lot of departments are adapting. And one of the most critical pieces that we're putting into place, and in the city of Madison and many organizations have employee assistant programs. And we've had a fabulous program in the city for a number of years. But one of the things that was missing in our system was just a peer-to-peer support, right? And firefighters are notorious for taking care of themselves. And so, and usually it's done through humor or some other venue. But sometimes that stuff isn't as helpful as actually having a trained professional helping. So in May of this year, we finally, after a couple years of working on this project, and you think, well, this seems easy, but it really wasn't, we identified about 15 of our responders in the city of Madison and trained them to be peer-to-peer support, and we call it our peer-to-peer support team. And so in the event in the city, if we have a call, and we let our own people define what is a bad call, because it could be you know, a mass shooting or just a shooting, or it could be a child with a asthma attack maybe that doesn't make it, or it could be just a grandma that maybe that individual that responded there just lost their grandma a week or two ago. So every single call is defined by the responder. You tell us what your bad calls are and then let us help you. And so across the country, we know that statistically that suicides in first responders are way up through the roof. In fact, suicides now are actually higher annually than line of duty deaths. And the fire service has done a great job at reducing the line of duty death numbers. But we just started, I think, in 2014 nationwide tracking suicides for firefighters, first responders.
We're going to get back to that in a moment. We have to take a break here. We are talking about first responders, firefighters in particular, and we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Often when a tragedy happens, people talk to me and people like me about what first responders are reporting about the event, but we don't always talk about how the first responders are reacting to the event. They are human, and they are asked to rush to scenes of some pretty gruesome stuff. Today, we're talking to two fire chiefs, Stephen Davis of the Madison Fire Department and John Cohn in Greenfield, about being firefighters. This in the wake of a gas explosion in Sun Prairie that killed one firefighter. Are you a firefighter? What drove you to be a firefighter? And how do you cope when you come in and you see something that you didn't actually expect and that hits you in a way that you didn't expect? 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Before we start this next section, I am going to share with you a correction that Stephen Davis just gave to me, which is I keep saying firemen, and that is wrong. Well, we need to say firefighters. In the Madison Police Department, there are about 50 firefighters who are women, and it is important to acknowledge that. So I apologize for that, and we'll say it correctly in the future. We are taking your calls. We've got Kimberly from Milwaukee. Welcome to the program.
Oh, hi. Hi. How are you? My husband, he is a career firefighter, and I guess I had a question when you were referring to the employee assistance program, post-traumatic stress, that sort of thing. You know, oftentimes I don't know, and I'm not just specifically referring to my husband, but some of his friends, you know, I don't know how comfortable they necessarily are sharing what has happened during their, you know, 24-hour shift, with maybe their peers or something else. And then oftentimes that comes home and, you know, I listen to him and hear about it and everything. And I guess I'm wondering, is there any kind of program for the spouses or the families that, so aside from being a listening ear, we can help, you know, cause it's rough sometimes. So,
you know what, Kimberly, this is Chief Davis from Madison. That is a great question. I can tell you that one of the things in Madison that we do is we bring the families in on day one of our recruit academy after we have new hires, and we tell them all kind of the signs and symptoms and things to be aware of changes in their loved one. And but I can be honest with you and say that we don't do a good enough job past that, right? We do very little spouse or partner follow-up. And it's one of the areas after we've kind of get this peer support program established that we're going to look to help support families better. Now, most providers with employee assistance also have the ability for spouses and family members to take advantage of that. So in the beginning, I would recommend that you contact your husband's employer's EAP if you ever really need anything. But also, I think, you know, it would be very helpful for spouses like yourself to kind of drive this issue. So if you really feel strongly about it, you should talk to your firefighter husband and say, hey, you know, it would be neat to have a little bit of support on the spouse side. I can tell you that, you know, the events this week in Sun Prairie have been very, very, very tough on all the volunteer firefighters and all the paid-on-call firefighters that work there, on their families and spouses, wives, husbands, kids. And you bring up a great point. I really think that it's an area that we need to explore more.
Thank you very much, Kimberly. John Cohn, we had somebody call in to talk about her daughter going into training as an EMT. She wonders what the possibility is that she will experience sexual harassment. She's heard a lot about sexism in this field. What do we tell her?
I think that, you know, as Chief Davis said, they have 58 female firefighters in the Madison Fire Department. Obviously, along with any profession, we deal with, you know, the culture of organizations, but there's still some, you know, and it goes along with any industry. There's cultures of organizations that lag behind, and there's cultures that are very accepting, and it doesn't matter. If you can do the job, you're accepted. And I can tell you that I know for a fact, we're a small organization. We have 50 career members, and we have two female firefighters. Mm. And they just recently mentored through the paramedic program another female firefighter, and she went on to get a career job in Milwaukee County as well. And they actually wrote an article on the first career firefighter in this fire department and recognized our females for doing such a tremendous job and how welcomed our organization was without any qualms of male or female. And that propelled her forward to go out and seek her career job. I went back to our females and I said, you know, I want to know, do we have any problems here? And they said, absolutely not. And I know, you know, you have to take that forward approach in organizations. And Madison's numbers speak to that they have a great percentage of female firefighters. But obviously, there's other organizations where that lags behind. I'll tell you that, you know, you'll hear of recruitment and retention issues, and that's true in every industry right now, it seems like, with, you know, economy and attracting workers and keeping workers. And I feel that, you know, when I see candidates, I mean, females fill a great niche with 80% of what we're doing. You know, they're passionate. They have great empathy. I think that, you know, it's an almost an obvious career for females. I have two daughters, and I'll probably get choked up when I say this, but when you don't have children, you know, you just think of people as people. My girls are getting a little bit older, 9 and 10 years old, and they come to the firehouse with dad, and they see Mel and Shannon, and they just think the world of Mel and Shannon because they're female role models. So, sorry for getting choked up.
No, that's okay.
But it's amazing to see that my young daughters, and why I get choked up is because it's personal to me, that they see that they can do whatever they want. And that's the culture that our organizations need to show. They need to be open. And that's when I say, you know, and I've spoke on this, you can't have diverse organizations unless you're inclusive. And too many organizations, you know, really try to drive diversity, but there's too many walls within those organizations. So, you know, other fire departments, I'm sure, are listening. Other EMS departments are listening. You know, there are a lot of resources out there untapped if you open, you know, and change your culture and be more inclusive. It's a field for everyone. As long as that's what they want to do, go for it.
Thank you for that, John Cohn. We are talking about what it's like to be a firefighter. We are taking your calls about what you found life as a firefighter to be like. Was it what you expected it to be? Is there a weird sort of dislocation dealing with the sort of the boredom, the waiting, and then suddenly dropping everything and going out to answer a call? 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Stephen Davis of the Madison Fire Department, you talked a little bit ago about suicides being higher among firefighters. Do we know why?
Well, there's a variety of factors, and there's some groups across the country that are studying the issue. And, you know, we know the obvious, the things that they see that firefighters see day in and day out that just are horrific, tragic things. They're also, you know, looking at things like alcohol and substance abuse as a cause or a contributing factor. But some of the interesting things that they're really looking at from the responder side is how much of that peer-to-peer support that we actually have in a healthy way, not, you know, like the crew going to the bar after shift and getting loaded all day. And one of the things that they're going to focus on or that they've looked at is actually seclusion in the fire station. And a lot of fire stations now are being built with privacy. Mm-hmm. Unlike years ago, back in the 40s, the 30s, the 20s, everybody kind of was together all the time. And in about the late 80s, early 90s, the trend started to move in fire station design for real private areas. So everybody has a bedroom or a bathroom or things like that. And they think that might be a contributing factor because people go on this horrific call, go back, and they go back to their bedroom and they think about it. And they think about it maybe in an unhealthy way, and that stuff starts to pile up and pile on. So, you know, we're getting smarter about ourselves. We're looking at cancer prevention. We're looking at suicide prevention, and some of these other areas that really hurt our first responders. And so, it'll be interesting to see what comes of some of these studies as time goes on here.
Cancer prevention.
Mm-hmm.
There's a higher rate of cancer?
There's a very high rate of cancer, and Chief Cohen can probably bail me out on some of the statistics, but because he's been a pretty large voice for the state of Wisconsin in the last year or two. But if you think about it, there's carcinogens in all smoke,
mm-hmm.
and smoke is and those carcinogens are absorbed through skin, and we walk into burning buildings full of carcinogens that get absorbed directly into our skin. Yeah, there's a real high rate of cancer.
John Cohen from Greenfield, talk to me about that. And also talk to me about the Wisconsin State Fire Chiefs Association's task force on firefighters struggling with mental health issues.
Absolutely. Hit the cancer one first. It shouldn't be a surprise. We're putting more non-organic products into our home. And when those start on fire and firefighters arrive, they're burning hotter and faster and more toxic.
Mm.
So the smoke that it gives off is more dangerous to our firefighters. Now, we wear protective gear, but the reality is that gear has to allow the movement of air or we would get super overheated. So we become sponges to the toxic environment. And I believe, going off the top of my head, if your body temperature goes up 5 degrees, your skin becomes 400% more absorbent. So we are taking in at a greater rate those toxic smoke environment into our skin. And then the question, you know, becomes the correlation between that and higher cancer rates. Studies, you know, show somewhere between 22% and twice as much incidence of cancers in firefighters. And the real problematic is there's some very specific cancers that firefighters are getting at a much higher rate and actually at a much younger rate than the general population. So we're, you know, sort of at the infancy of this. We've implemented some really simple stuff. Shower within an hour. You know, when you get back to the station, take a shower. Get rid of that excess soot that's on your skin. And then, you know, from there, you know, wearing your air pack. Firefighters, sort of a badge of toughness was to not wear your air pack in a smoky environment. We encourage our firefighters, whenever there's smoke, put your air pack on, because if you're breathing that in, you're breathing in toxic smoke and carcinogens. And then, you know, things that as you start to step up more progressively, you think about firefighters going to our firefighters started shift an hour ago at 8 o'clock, 45 minutes ago. And if they go on a fire right now, they're not going home till 8 o'clock tomorrow morning. So, you know, we've made an investment in our firefighters' health and safety, and we bought every firefighter a second set of gear, because if they return to the station at 10 o'clock this morning with soot-covered gear, and now they have to work another 22 hours, they're able to change into a fresh set of gear. And then, you know, washing that gear, it used to be another badge of honor to walk around with dirty gear and a smoked-up helmet. And and I'm sure I didn't phrase this, but, we got to make clean cool because we're trying to improve the health of our firefighters. So, yeah, we're at the infancy of this. Good news out of Washington, they just actually signed a cancer registry bill that the CDC is going to start monitoring and tabulating cancer in firefighters. So hopefully we can get at more of the root of this problem. And when we get at the root, maybe we can see on how we can curb these rates in firefighters. Onto the mental health portion of it, Chief Davis described it wonderfully. And to your caller, I think she makes a great point, but, you know, that's why also it is called peer-to-peer. My wife and my family are hugely supportive, but they also aren't first responders. And there's something, you know, there's something about first responder that people walk in they've walked in each other's shoes. Mm-hmm. They have something to relate to that. So as supportive as our families are, and absolutely they need to be supportive, and absolutely we need to do a better job of getting them trained, there is something strong about the peer-to-peer correlation. And the task force that we created on mental health, you know, I've seen people close to me commit suicide that are first responders. Neighboring department had one. Other neighboring department had one. And we just need to sort of be more transparent about this and talk about it. You know, we're all struggling. And when you add, and we all have non-first responders. Every person has stress in their life. Mm-hmm. Finance, marriages, family, time, you name it. Now you start to add in these calls. And as even you stated, you know, mass shootings. And obviously the mind travels to the most horrific calls, but there's evidence that, and I call it mental Jenga, but even some of the small calls or the medium calls, it doesn't need to be a mass shooting, start to add up.
Mm-hmm.
There's a synergistic effect, and each one of us is sort of that game of Jenga, and each one of the tiles is time and family and money, and then add in calls and this call and that call and a call with a child, and we start to lean a little bit. And the idea behind peer support and family support is we need to catch people when they're starting to lean, when they start to have changes in their behavior. And why it was so important to start a task force in the state chiefs is we talked about many of our organizations being volunteer and the challenges with time and training, and they're raising funds for their departments and going on calls. Well, now how do you fit in also going to a 40-hour peer support class? And we know that that's not possible everywhere in the state.
Mm-hmm.
So what we need to do is we have peer support members. Madison has peer support members. Milwaukee Fire Department has peer support members. We want to, in the infancy of our program, make sure everyone is aware of programs that exist. And if people need help, connect them to current resources that exist while we also start to build out more resources all around the state. So firefighters that are having trouble know where to turn to, because that's even some of the problem. They don't know where to turn to. And as Chief Davis said, where did we used to turn to? You know, we used to turn to the bar.
Right.
And we need to turn towards each other to really try to curb this problem.
You were just listening to John Cohn. He's the chief of the Greenfield Fire and Rescue. We're also talking to Stephen Davis, who is the chief of Madison Fire Department. We're going to be back in a moment. It's the morning show. Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. When a fire alarm goes off, we run out. Firefighters run in. When we smell a gas leak, we call the fire department and they come check it out. That's what happened earlier this week in Sun Prairie. The leak turned into an explosion which injured first responders, killing one. Are you a family member of a first responder? We want to hear from you. We just did a little while ago. Is it tough? How do you help your spouse? Do you feel like you have a good grasp on the kinds of things that your loved one experiences every day? 800-642-1234. Ideas@WPR.org is the email, and you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We are talking to Madison Fire Chief Stephen Davis and Greenfield Fire Rescue Chief John Cohn. And we've got a call from Paul in Green Bay. Thank you, Paul, for being with us.
Good morning, and thank you for taking my call, and hello to the two chiefs there.
Hey, Paul.
I'm a career firefighter for the last 25 years in Northeast Wisconsin, and I came into this field after 12 years of working in finance when I graduated from college, and I was always very service-oriented, involved in many things on board, but you really sacrifice nothing to be of service in those cases, and becoming a firefighter for me was a great source of pride to work among a group of people who were being of service, but making sacrifices to provide that service, whether it being many, many Christmases where you're not able to spend it with your family, or as you all have talked about, the, you know, risk of dying at a much younger age because of the things we're exposed to. But the question I would say, I agree with a lot of what you have said, Chief, and you, some of it I caught, some of it I didn't when I saw on the phone. But as we've promoted diversity, to me, it's led to a lot of issues in the fire stations where, as you said, we're now having separate bedrooms, and I've seen stations that even have separate TVs in each bedroom. And one of the great things that helps with emotional support, and you guys are both the big enough departments to have old stations with the dorms where everyone sleeps together and everyone's together and then the separate bedrooms, is, you know, I think we need to get back to the way that we all live together, eat together, and don't have the opportunity to compartmentalize, because I think that's a great thing that's really causing a lot of the isolation and a lot of the mental problems that seem to be cropping up more and more. And I just wanted to get your opinions of that.
Thank you very much,
yep,
Paul.
Yes. Yeah, Paul, I would agree with you 100%. You know, the other thing that really I think is impacting the fire service that we haven't admitted to yet is cell phone usage. You know, and I don't know if you see a lot of that in Green Bay, but as our newer generation comes in, and even our older people now, everybody has a smartphone, and it's not uncommon for me to walk into a firehouse, kitchen, and see six people there on their smartphones. It's almost
right.
Like walking into my teenage child's sleepover or whatever.
Right.
I think we're onto something with station design and that fear of isolation and like you said, televisions in the bedrooms and things like that, because we aren't together as much in that 24-hour period. And anybody that's done this line of work knows that one of the best things is to sit and talk with your partners, your peers. So I think we need to be conscientious of society's changes on the fire service, like the introduction into smartphones like we see today, and then also be really conscientious of station designs. We're in the process of adding a 14th station in the city of Madison, and we brought this issue up to the design team. And the architects were able to design a facility that is going to encourage more togetherness, but also have some private spaces for those phone calls home at night and things like that. So I think it's an important issue, and hopefully the fire service stays on top of it or gets ahead of it.
We are talking about firefighters today, and we're taking your calls. Greg from Duluth, Minnesota, thank you for calling.
Yes.
So yes, what's your story? What's your comment?
I've been retired from the fire department now since 2002. Prior to that, I was a 20-year member for about 13 years of that 20. I was chief. And since my retirement, I've been just suffering with no ambition, no real communication is breaking down between my wife and myself. I am currently going, actually right now, for a Rule 25 assessment because I was arrested for substance abuse. And the more I heard on the show today, the more things were just hitting home. And I just wanted to call and thank you for having a program like this. I think it's something that has long been overdue, that for the last 10 years, I didn't know why you just were so lethargic, just not wanting to live your life the way you used to.
And you think that this is...
I don't think I'm the only one that suffers like this.
You are going for help. I just want to make sure, Greg, you are going for help?
Pardon me?
You are going for help?
Yes, I am. I'm going for help. I have an appointment I'm on my way to right now, and one of the main topics I'm going to ask them about is the PTSD and how we
that's great, Greg.
Get started on some treatment for that.
So, Steve,
I don't know if it's possible, but maybe, you know, get Greg's phone number and we can try and get him, you know, some peer resources. But
okay.
he brings up a great point, and we've talked about it for nearly an hour of the service that we provide. And it's, you know, as the, the spouse's name that called in, but we have an issue that we need to deal better with our spouses. And something that's on our front lines, too, is we need to deal better with people that are approaching or are retired, because they have given back to their community for 20, 25, 30 years, and it's become such a part of their life and such a part of their identity that when that's gone, there's a huge vacuum in life. So it's another thing that's on our radar of how we help our people that are approaching or at retirement, keep them connected. And retirement sounds great, but you have to do something. And especially when you come out of this career, something looks drastically different than helping people and saving lives. So it's another, you know, challenge that's ahead of us. But, you know, I'm glad that, you know, for an hour we've reached some people and Greg realized some things that need help, and I hope others as well. And we're going to continue chipping away at this problem. And it's satisfying to hear because, you know, mental health versus putting out a fire, sometimes, you know, being on the mental health bandwagon isn't the sexiest of things. But obviously the need exists, and we're going to – a call like that pushes us forward.
Steve, you have about 15 seconds.
Yep. You know, we talked a lot about the vulnerabilities in the fire service, EMS, police, but the community should all be aware that your people are there and they're serving you the best that they can. So I wanted to thank you for having us on the show and bringing some light to these issues.
Okay.
Well, thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Greg, for that call. That was amazing, and I'm pulling for you. John Cohn is the chief of the Greenfield Fire Rescue and past president of the Wisconsin State Fire Chiefs Association. Stephen Davis is the chief of the Madison Fire Department. He's also been assisting in the Sun Prairie investigation. Chiefs, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Morning Show is produced by Colleen Leahy, Brianne Chasso, Chris Molina and Laura Pavin, and Sarah Hopeful. Michael Derringer is our technical director. Keely Boltina is the executive producer. I'm Carrie Kaufman, and this is the Ideas Network.